Our audits are submitted annually, Lyle, and so we are working on our 2022 audit as we speak right now. We will send the trial balance off to the auditors in March. It takes a couple months for us to go back and forth with them. It's a lot of legwork that's put into an audit. So if you've ever been part of it, it's very extensive, very time consuming to juggle current day activities. And an audit all at the same time is very time consuming for fiscal, yet we pull it off every single year. With that being said, I could have pulled up the same presentation I did in September because nothing has changed for the tribe. So when I came up here, I just gave a kind of a broad overview and saying that, you know, we're focused on the balance sheet. The balance sheet is upside down. We continue to still face the same issues we faced last year, the year before, and 5 years ago, being that we don't have no cash. So if you felt that that was sugarcoating it, the truth is we're broke, 100%. So when the council comes to me and they say, Patricia, we want to invest in a plot of land over here, but we need $400,000 in order to secure that. Well, I have to be the bad news and say, I'm sorry, but where do I get that from? I don't have any reserve account. We don't have those little pots of funds that we once saw years ago. The government has continued to spend in a manner that we have cash. We do not. And I said that we have been able to maintain, being that the presentation I showed in September, where we were about $5 million upside down, is because we had ARPA and we had CARES and we were able to shuffle different departments into that eligible funding, which then allowed us to not have to utilize unrestricted cash flow that's not there, because now we had a pot of money where there's actual hard dollars for us to use. And so we've been able to shimmy for the last couple of years. But moving forward, when I say that, you know, we've been depleting that because we've been relying on it on the last couple of years, it's not going to be there in 2024, 2025. So in order to work on that balance sheet and bring it into a positive standing, I listed four areas in which we need to address: revenue streams, reimbursements in a timely manner when we're going out and fighting fires. That costs the tribe general fund money up front. Now we need to turn around and make sure that we're getting paid in a timely manner from the Bureau. In addition to that, you know, timber, making sure that we are getting the best value for our dollars. And there are a lot of different elements that go into play when it comes to a timber sale. They're very complex numbers involved in that. You have to make sure you're getting the tribe a dollar, HFI and operating logging cost, and getting money for reforestation. Because we are held by 25 CFR, if I'm correct, Jeff, that we have to meet those obligations. And when we talk about the sawmill and sawing those logs, it is a cost, you know. We have to still develop what is the stumpage to the tribe. And if we're going to operate a sawmill, how are we going to reforest that forest that we're taking those logs from in order to sawmill up? So there's a lot of things in play, and it's not just a simple answer. It takes a lot of time and deliberation, and I think that's where you as a community come in to understand what we're facing and to offer, you know, guidance or solutions. Not so much just badger about it, but offer a solution. You know, what do you think? Do you think we should shut down these things? Do you think we should keep going? You know, the decision lies with the membership about the changes that the table needs to make.
Well, that's a good point. But the history of the mill is that it didn't, and it can't work. We studied that. There are so many business plans written around that mill. And I said BG Lumber, vertical grain, the first thing they did, they bought a mill that couldn't cut vertical grain. So, yeah, if you wanted to do a mill, come up with a business plan that shows something, but don't try to wing it, guys. That just eats up your money. Sound like you know what you're doing, but I'm not real thrilled with the financial status of the tribe right now, and I know it's going to get tough. It's going to get worse.
Most certainly.
And this federal gravy train is going to dry up. Okay, so what are we going to do? Now, you're talking about revenue streams. And I would tell you this, we missed a great opportunity when you talk about investment by not buying the Bigfoot Country Club. I am very concerned today. I'm going to say something. I'm sorry. I'm going to offend all my Yurok relations and yours too. But there is no fifth district in the Hoopa-Yurok Settlement Act. And Aboriginal territory belongs to us. The problem that I see now is that if the Yurok tribe starts taking land into trust in Willow Creek, that takes our opportunity for economic opportunity or economic investment. Land cannot be taken into trust except by the tribe whose the land being taken into trust is within their Aboriginal territory. And I'm just going to say this. Anything upriver from us is not Yurok. I just went to my uncle's Yurok funeral. I got nothing against Yurok people. I think they're doing their own thing. But this is an encroachment on our sovereign right to take land into trust within our Aboriginal territory. And our Aboriginal territory goes all the way to Burnt Ranch. Okay? So defend that. Not just for now, but there is no fifth district in the Hoopa-Yurok Settlement Act. The Hoopa-Yurok Settlement Act says Hoopa's territory is the square, Yurok's territory is the extension. That is the extent of their jurisdiction. So watch your back.
Yeah, I just want to address real quick what Lyle had stated. You know, we have asked our attorney to look into that as far as the encroachment, and we're going to set up a meeting with the Yurok tribe to discuss that matter. You know, I don't think it sits too well with really anybody, but go ahead.
About the sawmill, my experience with the sawmill was when Wilco was here, and the only way that the sawmill will ever be successful is if you cut your big vertical grain logs like Lyle's talking about, where you, I don't know what the current log market is, but I know that VG's worth like probably $3,000 a thousand versus, you know, what we get minimally for stumpage. And the other thing would be that you have to make sure that you take care of all your quality control here. You can't send it out and depend on the man on the other end to give you the best deal because he's looking out for them. So that's all I'll say.
Yeah. All right. Let's have one last comment, and then we have to go to lunch.
Hi. I'm Rosella Moon, and I know that I wasn't here for the whole meeting. I apologize. But I do have some small, not small, but issues that I would like to address. One is the right to die at home. I know that my generation has taken care of people that have had to die at home. And then we as Indian people, we believe in the right to die at home, you know, and the level of care that is given is something that we need to look at. As Indian people, we're kind of proud and we don't like to say when we hurt or we're in pain. And so the level of care shouldn't have to be asked for. There should be a lot more inpatient, in-home supportive services for people who choose to die at home, and that is our right. I believe that. I have had numerous family members that have. I have had to witness people go through pain when they're dying at home, and it shouldn't have to be that way. We should have that right, and we should be able to die at home. The other thing is water. I've had 3 confirmed cases of H. pylori on my hill. I live in community service. There's a brand new water tank that provides water to our hill. And H. pylori is a water parasite. And I was given the water report that shows everything's fine and dandy, and it's not okay. You know, I have another family member that is in the hospital right now who might have it too. I don't know yet. It's not confirmed. But these are things that we need to look at. I have to buy water and yet pay for water too. I have to buy drinking water. What does that say? You know? And then the other thing I wanted to talk about was on a Weaver's perspective. I know that we go out and we burn for hazel stakes and everything else like that, but the part about the willows on the river, because our river doesn't get high enough anymore and it doesn't wipe out the sticker bushes have grafted into the willow root system. You could go to a willow bush and know you're picking it off of willow bush, but if there are sticker bushes behind it, it is grafted into the root system and they break like carrots. So that's something that should be a part of you know, the preservation of the stakes and the burning and everything else like that, that should be looked at. And this is a kind of an embarrassing note, but it's true. Since we put the dump on the valley floor, the rat system is unreal. And it affects everybody, whoever house is clean, whoever's house is dirty, it's just everywhere. And it's because it's on the valley floor, as well as where our water treatment facility is, right above the old dump. These are things that I don't want. I have seen other reservations that I've come into contact with. Laytonville was one of them, where they have, like, you might as well say the kids are glowing green because they can't even swim in the summertime in their own water because of their water treatment plants and stuff like that. We need to look at that, and we need to look at the cancer rate that we have here because of where our water plant is. These are things that in my generation and in my time that I've seen on my own. And these are things that I didn't know how to voice, but I guess that's where this part comes. And the other part is the wellness court. I am very happy with the wellness court, and I don't understand why we have to have so much county influence for us. If it says in our own judicial bylaws that we have the right to have an elder committee, if we don't want to go through the civil part of our laws, if we want to have three elders of our choosing decide a matter, and it says it in our own laws, then why do we have so much Humboldt County in contact with all of our wellness court and our children and our CPS? I mean, this is an Indian thing. These are families. We are families. We're all people. And when one falls, the rest of the family picks you up and helps you. And I don't understand why, if that's the process, and as we come back together and we get better and we get whole, why we have to go back out to the county and say, see what I did? They don't know us. We know us. We see us. We see how we do better. And so we should be the judge of whether or not we should have our children back, not somebody from out there. And that's what I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Rosella. A lot of good points there. So Rosie had asked for one more comment. We're going to go to her, and then we'll turn it over to Leslie Bautista with Hoopa Development Fund. Leslie will be presenting via Zoom as her son is competing in the North Coast Section Championships for wrestling today. So we wanted to support that, but she'll be on in any case. Go ahead there, Rosie.
I know, right? I have that blood type. I can't wear watches either. My name's Rosella, and I was really nervous earlier, and so I had missed one of the topics that I wanted to discuss, which is we have to really look at our land and allotment and heirs to that land, because unless you want an incestuous tribe, I mean, like, the blood quantum is going down. And I don't think it's right that anybody who is raised Indian, you have Indian grandparents, you're raised on the reservation, you have Indian all around you, but because, you know what I mean, like, the blood quantum goes down. And that's just my grandchild, say, for instance. I could have a child that doesn't have enough blood to become on the roll, but is raised here. And when I want to leave them my house, and I have a will and says that I want to leave them my house, why can't they have that house that they were raised in? Why is the tribe allowing county to come in and to enforce county rules on something that is Indian and it's something that hasn't even went to probate yet? The probate backlog is unreal. I mean, like, it's not anybody else's fault. It's just another cog in the bureaucracy of time and what happens here. But I understand that, and I am saying that if that's the case, then why isn't there a stay of orders on any kind of enforcement of trespassing or anything else like that? If a person is raised there and a person is living there, and then Johnny come lately wants to come because there's a piece of land, you know what I mean? Like an outside person who is, even if they are family, they never were raised here, they never were born here. They chose to live someplace else, and then you have the son that took care of the father while they're dying. and then is told to leave their home. That's not right. And there's no probate done yet, but they're still told to leave their home. Where's the tribe at on this? I want to know, because this is not anywhere but at the front door right now. There are generations that are coming up. Like I said, it could be my child even that could not have had enough blood to be on the roll. I mean, like, we have to look at the descendant roll. We have to look at this land issue. We have to look at this probate thing. We have to look at it now and not wait for a numerous backlog of all these cases to say, oh, we should probably look at this. You know what I mean? Like, this is something that's happening right now. We need to get a hold on this because it's breaking families apart, for one. It's allowing county to come in and enforce their rules where I thought we were a sovereign nation. That's something that we should be at the forefront of and that we should be making the headway on and not allowing and just following behind and saying, okay, well, what do you think? You know what I mean? Like, this is what's happening with our people today. And so that was my last topic that I wanted to bring up.
Thank you. Definitely some things for the council to consider, membership as well. So the remaining of our agenda here, next up we have the Hoopod Development Fund presenting on their small business program. Then we have the housing update, the PUD broadband, irrigation, and energy, and Kamau behavioral health programs. Let's get through our agenda, and then we'll go to the open mic again and give people a chance to ask questions and give comments. But let's go ahead and get through our agenda. Next up is Leslie Bautista Nelson. She's our Hoopa Development Fund Manager. So go ahead there, Leslie. We can't hear you too well, Leslie. Maybe try to speak into your mic a little more.
Yes, we can.
Barely. Just do your best. Try to speak loudly.
Okay. I apologize for that. Okay. So my name is Leslie. I just wanted to thank you for your time, and I appreciate.
Hey, it's not working out, Leslie. We're gonna have to move on here in the agenda. Let's call housing up, please.
Hello, can you hear me good? Good. All right. Darcy Padilla, the executive director for the Hoopa Valley Housing Authority. I'm happy to see you all here. We did have a presentation that was printed back there. I tried my best to hand out what was there. I think Lillian's getting some more copies made if you guys need to see it. So, go up there. I'd like to call up Lauren Norton, please. He is our project manager. I thought he was going to get out of presenting today. All right, go ahead on the next slide. So our mission statement is to provide the Hoopa Valley Tribal membership with the opportunity for safe, sanitary, and affordable housing by way of new constructions, acquisition, rehabilitation, and maintenance of existing houses. This process will not only promote jobs, economic self-sufficiency, economic independence, but also enhance the quality of life with a direct relationship to our unique culture and traditional values. So some of our programs that we have, programs and services within the Hoopa Housing Authority. We have the low-income NAHASDA rental program. We have our rent-to-own program, the student rental assistance program, the housing improvement program, which is our HIP program. And we also, in the near future, will be having our homeowners assistance fund. So I'm not sure if you guys all remember that the emergency rental assistance program that we had helped renters. The homeowners assistance fund will help homeowners in the same aspect, like with utilities, mortgages, taxes, you know, and such. We are waiting for the plan to come back for it to be approved, and then we'll start distributing those funds and have application out for you all in the near future. Our projects, I'm sorry, it's so hard because it's behind me. I can't see what it looks like. Our projects update, so we have our 2018 Indian Community Development Block Grant, ICDBG. We have our housing improvement program. We'll go into these ones are we'll go through in detail. We have our housing improvement program, our IHBG competitive grant, our regional early action planning, which is the REAP grant that you've heard some things on today. And then we have our low-income housing tax credit, which is therefore our Elders Village. Again, the Elders Village is not the name. We're still doing that research to see, because I know that we got some flack as far as that being the name. Okay. So our 2018 Indian Community Development Block Grant, this consisted of HVHA used the ICDBG grant to rehabilitate 15 homes that were in need of updating. The rehabilitation consisted of interior and exterior upgrades. HVHA is nearing the close out of the ICDBG grant with a couple of items remaining, including upgrading electrical panels and the widening of a couple of driveways in the Hosterfield complex. Items that are upgraded in these homes, there's a list of them that are on there that shows we replaced the exterior siding and new paint. These were very old rentals within our complexes, so we did that. We had we addressed removing any water damage or rot, we placing foundation under closet pop-outs, installation of HVAC systems, replacing wood-burning stoves and piping, we replaced the wood stove hearth pad, converting cooking range to propane. A lot of the times when we run out of gas or electricity, at least they're still able to cook with the propane. Installation of propane tanks and lines, installation of moisture sensing exhaust fans in all of the bathrooms. We repainted all bathrooms with mold resistant paint, installation, and our last one that we just did down there is we did the installation of the traffic undulations and signage for the speed control within those neighborhoods, and we're trying to continue to do that with the other complexes. Right now we did Hostler Field, we're set to do our Norton Field, and then we're going to go after some more for our Campbell Field. The Housing Improvement Program, which is HIP. So HVHA acquired the BIA Funding Housing Improvement Program from the Hoopa Valley Tribe. HVHA currently has 16 applicants on the wait list, and it continues to grow. Two applicants currently on the wait list have an active project. Our next project is scheduled to be completed by February 24, 2023. HVHA has faced a lack of interest from qualified contractors to bid on HIP projects. That was kind of something that I talked about at our previous general meeting, just trying to get that out there because we really need that workforce out there to try to come help us repair these, you know. But HVHA has responded by creating their in-house HIP force account crew of three team members. HVHA's HIP crew has mobilized and started their first HIP project crew. And so within this, we went within our structure, you know, because it costs a lot of money to try to get these things happening. So we kind of played around with our force account crew that we already had with housing that are working up at our competitive grant. But we're trying to utilize their skills as well as some of our more skilled maintenance people to just kind of go through. So eventually I would like to create more jobs, you know, for this to happen. And a lot of the time it takes a lot to be able to get them in there to build so we could get this going within our crew. So we do struggle at housing with our workforce crew. And so if there's anybody interested or, you know, family members or such that would like to go into that field, please have them come and see housing. A major challenge that HVHA has faced with the HIP program is the 60,000 threshold. And so again, you know, inflation and such and the rise of costs on materials and labor, you know, it far exceeds 60,000 on just a basic bathroom renovation. And so a lot of the times they're like, well, I placed down that I needed new floor and I needed all five bedrooms and I need, we have to limit those amounts to strictly our health and safety and what we could do at best with this amount of 60,000. I've talked to the council and asked the council to represent, you know, with the BIA on these costs, but it's just something that cannot be negotiated. I'm not quite sure. I think that they've tried. It's, you know, not with the lack of effort. It's just that's their price that they stick at, and we have to try to find more resources to go over that 60,000 to try to put in there so that we could fix these projects. With the current costs and increasing inflation, which I just said, you know, HVHA found the 60,000 cap to be insufficient to bring homes up to standard. The Indian Housing Block Grant Competitive, IHBG. So this is where we're up at the Campbell Field project. These are our rent-to-owns. So we have six completed units up there. We have 4 3-bedroom units, 2 2-bedroom units, and 2 2-bedroom units in their final stages. And if Lauren would like to come up and speak to any of the progress and such that is going on up there, if you guys have, would you like to? Come on.
Yes, with the Campbell Field development, right now our force account crew had just started 5 new homes up on the upper terrace where we call the cul-de-sac. And we have 2 of those homes framed up. We've got trusses installed yesterday, Friday. Those homes will be weatherized in. We'll have completion of those 5 homes by the end of the fiscal year. The other thing that we're doing, we put out 10 homes on the open market to competitive bid. And with those 10 homes, we just had a pre-bid walkthrough. On Wednesday, we had 3 general contractors show up from the coast, and we had 1 general contractor show up from Cottonwood. Those homes will be reviewing the bids on those homes in the 1st of March, and then hopefully we'll be starting those projects in April. This will give us a total of 19 homes that was going to be completed by October 1st of this year. And they'll be ready, part of our rent-to-own program.
Again, with this Campbell Field project, our hope was to build rent-to-own so that our current renters, you know, would apply for these programs and go into a rent-to-own aspect of it, therefore freeing up our rental units for other members to be able to utilize. I would like to have seen more involvement as far as, you know, people applying for these homes. Our list is small, I will say that now, and it is very surprising to me on how small that list is. But, you know, again, this is a project that we're trying to do for home ownership eventually. Mr. Chairman, has talked about, you know, the mutual help program. And unfortunately, the mutual help program, we just do not have. And so, you know, we developed this program for the rent-to-owns to try to get people to go into their home ownership. And it essentially goes with the same thing, you know, as a mutual help home. It's better to pay, you know, for something that you're going to have rather than renting for 15 years. I mean, we have people in our rental complexes that have been there for 15 plus years. And it's like, can you imagine how much money you've placed in there that you could have had your own home already, you know? And so we're trying to encourage them to do that. Moving on to our Regional Early Action Plan grant, which is the REAP grant. We collaborated with the planning department and Joan Briggs and submitted. The grant application was submitted December 2022. We have a possible award up to $5 million, and this is going to help with the infrastructure costs of the Alameda property. That's where we're We have it scoped for the Elder Village, again, Elder Village in quotations, because we know that that's not something that is preferred by the elder community. We should have an anticipated grant award notification in March of 2023. On some good news with that, we did hear from the REAP HCD. They reached out to us just this last week. So I feel like we're in the running with just that reach out of, hey, you know, can you give us a little bit more clarification on certain things? We submitted that back again on Friday. They give this 30-day, which is actually something that the state has done, which is a positive thing, is they give tribes, you know, that opportunity to 30 days after the deadline is there for other areas. Tribal people or tribal organizations get an extra 30 days because they have noticed that a lot of the state programs that are out there do not fit tribes. And so they're in the talking with them and trying to figure out what it is that's going to work for tribes. And so, I think that is really good kudos to them that they're making that effort, you know, to at least try to make it work for tribal organizations. The REAP grant award would secure funding to help with the Alameda property development, as well as include improvements on existing infrastructure to the Hostler Field subdivision. This right here is the map that kind of shows where it's going to be if you guys are not familiar with it. On the side up here is the Hostler Field. On the top is our Hostler Field housing. And then just adjacent to that, that right here is the concept drawing. And again, this is just a concept drawing. This is something that we're looking at to try to develop, but we're getting elder input and community input on what is going to work the best. So that's a good question. Joe just asked about any of the money in the infrastructure. So the tribe did award us the 1.9 to help with infrastructure. So those costs have been used with the tribe's ARP. Those costs have been used to start the process of the environmentals and the culturals. And, you know, we started on a piece of land that was undeveloped. And so, you know, we're starting, you know, from the ground up, you know, as they say. So if Lauren would like to come up and talk a little more as far as how that is working.
Yep. So right now with the Alameda Development, so-called Elder Village project, we're in the pre-development stages. What we're doing is a lot of community outreach right now. We've had two sessions at Senior Nutrition, and Darcy attended the Senior Nutrition with me on this last Wednesday, and the folks at Senior Nutrition were really engaged. They had some good ideas, and every time we go there, we get good feedback. We have a questionnaire on the table for you folks to look at, to turn in, to help us with the pre-development, talking about what services we would like to see. One of the things that kind of cracked me up with the feedback we got on Wednesday, we had one elderly lady who said that, are we going to have you guys going to allow guns? I want to have my pistol. I feel like having my pistol is important. And so that was really surprising. This is what kind of feedback we're getting. What we're looking at here is a cluster form of the units. We're going to have 25 units. Out of the 25 units, 20% are going to be two-bedroom. All the rest are going to be single-bedroom. They're going to go around, they're going to go around a central common building. And that's kind of what we're asking for, is what they would like to see in the common building, what kind of amenities. We heard of fish cleaning stations. We heard of smokehouses, a walkable community, raised garden beds, fruit trees, also oak trees for acorns, organic pathway besides concrete. That's kind of what the feedback that we're getting right now. Again, we're doing the environmental stage. We have not broke ground because we are in the Denoto corridor. I met with Josie earlier, it was July or so, Josie, And we identified that we have cultural concerns on the Alameda property next to two villages. And so we're doing the cultural survey right now. That's in process. We're also working with the forestry department. We're doing our botanical and biological, and we're also doing endangered species. I will have the EA done by June, and then by that time we'll have notice of all of our funding, and hopefully that we're going to be starting construction August, September of this fiscal year.
So he jumped over a little bit and in regards to what we have going on, but it skipped over a little on our LIHTC, which is our low-income housing tax credit. And so we've collaborated with Travoy to try to go after this award to develop once we're done with the infrastructure. But just so that you guys are aware right now, of course, we got the 1.9 from the tribe, and then we're looking hopefully to get, you know, the max of 5 million with the REAP project to move forward. He kind of talked in regards to everything that was under our LIHTC presentation. So I believe that was, I mean, I'm not sure if we want to kind of go back as far as the different mission statements that we were looking at, the vision, the benefits. Again, you know, the slideshow is here, and if anybody wants to get my contact information, I don't mind emailing it out to you all just so that you have it if you didn't get a copy. You know, we talked about the amenities. That's a hard word for me to say all the time. I always think I'm Nemo, but yes, amenities. He talked about that. You know, and then the way that it's looking. Oh, there we are. Okay. Cooper Valley Housing Authority, this is our contact number. So if there is anything on there, you could contact us. We do also have our website, www.hvha.us. A lot of our applications and our policies are on that website as well, for you guys to look at. We do try to post any updates that we have going on. We'll go ahead and get this slide on there as well. Okay, and I think Joe had it down to have questions after everybody gets done presenting. So thank you.
Thanks, Darcy. Now we're going to turn to Linnea Jackson, our Public Utilities District Manager. Linnea oversees broadband, irrigation, energy, and so much more. A lot of water infrastructure and the transfer station, so I'll turn it over.
Good afternoon, tribal membership. So the talking points that we have today are some of the main projects that we're working on. Even before I worked at Public Utilities, I did not understand all of the divisions and responsibilities that come with that. So along with broadband, energy, and irrigation, we have our domestic water service, we have our transfer station, we have our construction service where we install water and septic systems for our tribal members, as well as an agreement with the Indian Health Service for other members that live within the jurisdiction and boundaries of HOOPA. So there are a lot of different disciplines and facilities that are housed under Public Utilities, and it's a lot of responsibility, which I take very seriously. So the first thing that we're gonna talk about is broadband. We did receive funding from the CARES, from the Tribal Council, and that gave us our initial startup and seed money. Since then, we've received different grants from the California Public Utilities Commission, and that was in partnership with Hunter Communications. And what that did was install fiber optics along the existing telephone poles on three sections. We received an NTIA grant for $65 million for fiber to the home, which seems like an incredible amount of money. But in the state of California, the price per mile is about $400,000 to $500,000 for that infrastructure. It is the rock sawing, it's the environmental, it's the underground conduit, it is the handholds that are required there. So if you think about the long-term investment of fiber to the home, the undergrounding is what we need in our area because we deal with wildfires, we deal with rock slides, we deal with weather that will snap the trees. So what we really need for high speed and longevity is the underground conduit. Where we're at with the NTIA grant is we have to finish the NEPA, the CEQA, the environmental permitting, the biological cultural resources that are required, and we're unable to break ground until all of those are completed. So we're working with our TIPA officer, tribal forestry, some of our environmental consultants, Hoopa Land Management. There's some right-of-way and land issues that we'll need to deal with, which are time-consuming, but we want to make sure that we're addressing this in the proper manner. We are also building a communications tower on Jones Point. And anybody that lives in Campbellfield knows that there's lack of cell service there. There is lack of internet service there because of how it's tucked away. So Jones Point is up on the hillside, right beside Hoopa Modular, and you can see the passive repeater that's up there. So we are going to build a communications tower in there, and that is going to greatly improve the connectivity throughout the valley. We've requested that project be an independent utility so we can break that section out and do that in a piecemeal approach. And we're also building a network operations center and a data center when that determination of the location is yet to be determined, and we need to talk about that with tribal council. So the second opportunity we have is the California State Middle Mile. It's the SB 156 bill that was approved, and we're working in coordination with Caltrans, we're working in coordination with Golden State Net, and that is going to be an underground build from the Hoopa border near Wichpec all the way to Willow Creek. So when we talk about Aboriginal territory, when we talk about asserting Hoopa, I wouldn't say power, but inserting our premise over our Aboriginal territory, that is exactly what we're doing here, and the state is recognizing that. So they're allowing Hoopa to be the lead as opposed to Caltrans from the Hoopa border all the way into Willow Creek. So that is going to be a joint build, which means that we are going to share costs. And again, that's going to be an open access underground conduit that's built for sustainability. So we have our fiber to the home paired with the SB 156 middle mile, which is going to provide connectivity to Kirby, which is the Klamath River Broadband Initiative, and that is being paired by Karuk and the Yurok tribes. And when you talk about that, it is going to need strengthening of tribal partnerships, government-to-government relations, and that is something that is critical because, as the chairman mentioned, we are stronger together. Yes, we are separate tribal governments. Yes, we have our own sovereignty issues and our goals, but we really need to be supportive, and that is one of my goals, and I feel like Hoopa does that. I think we're open to support each other for the benefit of this entire region. There is a strong tribal hold in Humboldt County and the state of California. We have more tribes than any other state in this jurisdiction. The Congressional District 1 has more tribes than any other congressional district in this country, with 26 just being in this region. So we really, really are better together with allowing, you know, the jurisdictions of each to benefit this region. The third one we have is Digital 299. That is a fiber build that is coming from Arcata all the way to Cottonwood. That was picked up by a private firm, and the tribe is being offered an IRU, which is an indivisible right of use. So it's basically giving us two fiber strands for tribal ownership for 30 years from Arcata all the way to Cottonwood. So if one leg comes out, we have that other route for redundancy. That's how we're going to get high-speed internet in here. I know that there has been issues with development of the wireless backhaul, but if you understand the incredible amount of work that has been done, we have a seven tower hop starting in Humboldt Hill to Neyland to Horse Mountain to Sugar Pine, which is the first tribally built tower that's owned by the tribe on tribal land. And then we also have three distribution towers. So we won't have to rely on any other weather that's gonna impact that. We also deal with energy resiliency issues. So every site needs battery backups, solar, a UPS system. So there's a lot that goes into that. And we are looking to refine that process. So that's kind of where we're at with broadband projects. These are long-term projects. It's going to take years to implement, not only from the studies, but the selection of the electronics, the selection of the technology, and implementation and building. So there's a lot of exciting things going on, and obviously with infrastructure, we need to think about self-sustainability. So someone mentioned when the grant funding runs out, how are we going to continue this service? And that comes with business development, that comes with pro formas, that comes with and looking at how we're going to sustain this. So that's also one of our goals that we're looking into. So that is the broadband update. Irrigation is something that we struggle with. Through our BIA compact, we are given $47,416 a year, and that has to remain the same since the 90s. That in no way covers the cost for irrigation at all. That's supposed to cover supplies, repairs, staff time, any other things that are necessary, and that doesn't even come close. People that have irrigation don't pay any services for that or fees to help sustain that. There's six different tributaries. That's Campbell Creek, McCarty, Pump House near Supply Creek, Softish, Hoxler, and Mill Creek. They were all built at different times. They all have maintenance needs, and they all have different functions. So we definitely need engineering funding. We need to look at, do we need to start pumping out of the river? But with that is going to need investment in the engineering and construction funds. So irrigation is something that I know is critical. We need to be using our water rights that helps sustain that. But we definitely need help on the financial side. Another big project is the energy side. So we have an application in with BIA. I expect that to be awarded any moment. That will provide analysis and sustainability and design for microgrids for critical facilities, as well as a PG&E substation microgrid, which is going to take an allocation of land for the solar panels, for the battery backups. So that's something that we all struggle with. Everyone is impacted by power outages here, the cost of energy, the irreliability. Breathing machines and medical apparatus, you know, it's struggling to keep your house warm. So energy resiliency is something that impacts everybody in this valley. We're working on offshore wind, and it is critical for the Hoopa tribe to be a seat at the table, whether it's city, whether it's local, whether it's county, state, and federal, and having that input and asserting our jurisdiction. And that's something that something I hold dear, and the reason why I attend these meetings, because it's so critical for them to hear our voice. And I really feel like that the tables have turned, and they are really considering tribes as strong partners and understanding our sovereignty and jurisdiction. So it's something that is critical to us. We're working on offshore wind. We are working on a grant application with Schatz Energy and CEC, which is the California Energy Commission. We're looking to apply for $250 million as a collective tribal unit, and the California Energy Commission will try and find that $250 million match, which will change the game here as far as energy resiliency goes. So I just want you to know that there's a lot of things that are happening under PUD. I hold that responsibility of the utmost. I'm trying to do my best to represent not only public utilities, myself as a tribal member, but this tribe in general. And it's something near and dear to my heart. So thank you for your time.
Great job, Linnea. You know, Linnea works many, many hours. She takes on a lot of projects in a lot of areas, and she works weekends, nights if she has to. You know, I tell her to try to take a break every once in a while because we don't want to overuse her. But in any case, next up, we got Mr. Boyd Ferris. Appreciate you guys sticking around. Boyd is really worried everyone is going to leave before he came up here, so here he is.
Thank you, Joe. And I do want to thank everybody. My criticism was, I said, well, they wanted me to come and give a presentation, but then I looked and I was at the very end. I said, after we eat, everybody's going to leave. So he said he'd make sure you guys all stuck around. So I appreciate that. I do want to make a disclaimer before I start. During my presentation, if it seems like, or If you interpret it that I point fingers at any department or agency, I want to say that that's not my intention. I understand that in providing services as an entity, we all have gaps, we all have strengths, weaknesses. So in providing this information and delivering it, I just want to let you know that it's not my intent to point fingers at any departments, but rather see how I can continue to work with them to, find the solutions. So my name is Boyd Ferris. I'm the Behavioral Health Director at Kamau Medical Center. Been there about 7 years. And what I'm going to do is go over and give an overview of our services for Kamau Behavioral Health. The next slide, please. At Behavioral Health, our funding, the department is responsible for mental health and substance abuse services. Our funding primarily is from Indian Health Service. For the last 7 years, it's ran around 421,000. We haven't seen an increase with regards to services, although the the need is definitely more than that. Additionally, we have Department of Justice funding. This year, we just received a new award. It runs from 2021 to 2026. And primarily what this funding does is it allows us to run our transitional living for aftercare services, men and women's house. This funding is 900,000 over 5 years, and that breaks down to just about just under 200,000 a year for the next 5 years. We also have SAMHSA funding. We have the Tribal Opioid Response Grant, and that funding is about 250,000 over 2 years. So we see about 125,000 of that for direct services each year. And the last funding is Vesper Society. What Vesper Society, I think someone spoke about it earlier with regards to Kamau Medical Center. They help with dental, diabetes, and I think the radiology department. But for Kamau Behavioral Health, they provided some gap funding in between our two DOJ grants for transitional living. The next slide, please. So with our mental health services, we provide therapy for individual couples, family therapy for anxiety, depression, grief, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia. We're able at this time to provide psychological evaluations and referrals for telepsychiatry. At this current time, we're staffed with two psychologists, and one of them is a locum. He'll be here. He's been here for about the last 2.5 months, and he'll be here through April. And the other psychologist is providing telehealth 3 days a week. He is off-site, but he's able to help with people who are on medications that are provided through their medical provider. So he's able to make recommendations about current medications, meet with people, and kind of monitor how those medications are working. For substance abuse services, we have certified and registered alcohol and drug counselors. We provide services to adults and youth. Those services are a continuum of services that range from referrals to detox, residential treatment, aftercare. We provide individual counseling, and then we have outpatient groups at our facility 5 days a week. We offer groups from 10 o'clock till 12, and those groups consist of early recovery, relapse prevention, anger management, step study groups, and then talking circles. And those groups are the Native American matrix model groups. That's an evidence-based curriculum for Native Americans. Next slide, please. We have, as I spoke about, transitional living. And this program came about years ago, I believe it was around 2012, at a health fair, we provided a survey to our community. And what the survey had asked was, what services did the community want to see with regards to behavioral health and substance abuse services? At that time, the community overwhelmingly said that they wanted to see aftercare services, because what the trend had showed is that our people go to treatment, they're in treatment, they have structure while they're there, they do very well, and then they would return home to the, you know, the kind of the same situation that they left. So we were able to secure a grant at that time for transitional living, and for the past about 4.5 years, we've been operating a men's house, and then for about the last 2 years, we started our women's house. And these houses are designed for people who complete either outpatient, 90 days of outpatient, or residential treatment, and then they can return home to a safe environment. While in those homes, they receive life skills, one-on-one continuing substance abuse care, case management for any type of medical, dental, or legal types of appointments that they have. So they get, a lot of people call it wraparound care while they're in those homes. One thing that I see with these homes is people always ask, well, how long can a person be there? And by our policy, it says that they can be there up to 18 months. So what that presents right away is the capacity right now is 6 people per home. And so we're about ready to exceed that. And so we're faced with the problem, I guess, we're faced with is at some point we have to start, you know, having people exit the program, or the other solution is we have to look for another house so we can continue to let people come in without having to push them out ahead of time before they're ready. So that's one thing we can talk about later as well. We have Native Connections. That's also a SAMHSA funding. We're in our last year of programming. This is for youth 10 to 24 years of age, youth and adolescents that are struggling with and or experiencing substance abuse, mental health challenges, and or suicidal ideation or attempts. So this program, I feel, is underutilized, but we're working to try and figure out how to better bridge the gap. So when people in our community, young kids as of late, have an ideation or have an attempt, they're not directly connected to services. So even though we're integrated with our medical clinic, there's not a like a connection that's instantly made. We have to identify those youth. We have to continue to work with the school to make sure that those are reported and tighten up the services. So that's something that is very, very important and on our list to increase the connections that are made and to get the most services out of that grant as we can, and then look to re-up another grant for Native Connections. As I spoke about Tribal Opioid Response, it's a grant-funded program through SAMHSA, and it's direct services. So we generally use the Indian Health Service Network when it comes to providing substance abuse services, and the Indian Health Service Network is the Friendship House in San Francisco, the Sierra Tribal Consortium program in Fresno. We have Three Rivers Lodge in Manteca and Stockton, and then we also have a Tule River Alcoholism program in Porterville. Those programs have Indian Health Service contracts beds within those places. And what makes a person eligible as being a federally recognized tribal member. So you can go to those without spending any money for treatment.